Did you go over in your plane?
Yes.
You flew the plane?
I don't know. We went over in a plane, whether that was the plane we...
But the whole crew flew the plane.
Yeah, we all flew to it. And that was another good thing. We left Texas and went up to Scottsdale, Illinois to pick up the plane. Went from there. We went to, in Maine, Bangor, Maine. And from Bangor, Maine, we went to Goose Bay, Labrador. And from Goose Bay, Labrador, we went to Greenland, Station 111. And then from there, we went to Iceland in Reykjavik. And each stop we made, the pilot, I don't know whether he did it on purpose or not, but we were delayed a few days. So it took us quite a while to get from America to Scotland. And we got per diem for every day that we're en route.
It was the ultimate civil servant.
It was. I think the Air Force was the next thing to being a civilian. I really do.
Thoroughly? Is that right?
Charlie.
You want to stop now and watch this, and then 27 seconds, I don't know what's going to happen.
Who's got the ball?
Board
2 points in the door.
So you were 19 years old, and...
I just turned 19.
Just turned 19.
Yeah.
So you went in what month?
October.
Oh, wow, you did. I mean, your birthday is September,
yeah.
So it's just 1 month.
Yeah.
Well, now, do you think you got any hits on any of those Germans while you were flying?
No, not one.
Yeah.
Not one.
Where?
In fact, when I was in...
Go ahead. I think it's... Yeah, it's on.
When I was in Vegas, in an Air Force base outside of Vegas, we had a lot of things to do, but when it comes to shooting at a sleeve pulled by another plane, they had to take me up for the second time and stuck me right next to the sleeve to make sure I hit it.
Really?
That's how I qualified to be a gunner on a B-17.
You couldn't hit the broadside?
No, I couldn't, no.
Well, here's something, if you don't mind me asking. It's something I never really understood. You have all these airplanes up there, and you're shooting out the side.
Yeah.
How is it you don't hit another airplane?
Well, how is it when you're a top turret operator that and you're swinging it around, how come you don't hit the tail? Right? Or a ball turret, not a ball turret operator. Whatever.
I mean, I know the bullets come out in a curve, but you're all packed in there,
yeah.
Right? And now, didn't you tell me that you...
Oh, there's one other thing I should tell you, I'm, if it's still on.
Yeah.
One of our raids, we were just going over, and they have a box down thing, and before you come into combat, you box up. Like this, and you know the horizontal stabilizer
right.
On a B-17 is real huge. Looking right outside my window, over the channel, these two B-17s went into each other in the changeover, and both planes, 20 guys, disintegrated within seconds.
Did you say that was your first mission?
No.
So that wasn't the first time
no.
You just listened.
And one of the guys on the plane that went down was a Polish aviator that wanted to go and see what daylight flying was all about. And he was one of the casualties in that two-plane crash. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that's pretty amazing. Did you guys make it back to base every single time?
Yeah, we never had a ditch or... Land someplace else, no.
And
we made it back.
Every time you went out, did you make it onto a mission or did any callbacks?
We got one recall, abort. Mm-hmm. It mentions in the book that our plane was aborted. The rest of the thing went on. But then the only other time they mentioned our crew was when we got shot down.
Your squadron, was it mostly new guys? like in my father's squadron, it was all new guys in that.
Well, basically, sure. I mean, I really messed up in the States, you know. I went to a dance one night, and I wound up dancing with an MP or something like that, an officer. I woke up in the guardhouse, and they had to drag me into the guard, and I was in a barracks, right? And the next morning, the prisoner was in charge of the barracks. He says, "You son of a bitch." He says, you came in here, you slept in three beds, and you pissed in every one of them. So I had to go see the provost marshal. Yeah? And I'm sitting down with two privates. This is in the States. And I'm sitting down there with two privates. And this provost comes in and he says, "Don't you privates know enough to get up when an officer comes in the room? You better get up too, Sergeant." You know, just like that. And then he's reaming out the privates, and then he says, "You better go home and sleep. I mean, back to your barracks and sleep it off." And then one other cute thing happened. We've got a sudden call to get the hell out of there. And I left my wallet on the bed with two $20 bills in it. Shortly after I don't know how long after I got to England in Turley, I get a package from some corporal I never heard of. He says, "I thought you might like, you know, use this." Two $20 bills in the wallet was still there. And I didn't even know the guy. And another time in Laurie Field in Colorado, where we're going to school, a guy asked me for $20. He says, "I'll pay you back on payday." He was gone, shipped out the next day, so I was out $20. You know what I mean? You meet crooks all over the place, even in the service.
Now, I remember from our previous conversation, I don't know if this guy might be interested, you were one of the first prisoners in to look for. It was like
yes,
a brand new
yes,
place.
Yes, brand new. 64 of us.
I remember you said they had you all herded over into one corner.
Yeah, and they had the lights on all night. They had dogs with guards walking around. And we were fed by an open, a field kitchen, you know, for our rations. And we had a bowl of dehydrated cabbage soup, ersatz tea, and a slice of bread. That was our daily diet, just those three items. And after a while, it was hard to stand roll call until the Red Cross came in.
But that camp blew up from 64 guys to almost 10,000.
Yes, four compounds. Yeah.
And, so you were there from May of 44 until
I was
February
shot down in August of 24.
February, shot February 24,
yes,
1944.
February 24, yeah.
Then you were in France.
I was
a prisoner for 2 months, maybe?
With the underground and then with the Gestapo, I'd say a month or so. I don't know.
Then the prison camp started before you were there. It opened in May, and then
you know when it opened?
Yeah.
Oh, so that was there until it was closed.
And that was in February, first week of February, 45.
Yeah.
And one story I remember you telling, I always got a kick out of, was the guy who put the toast on the windows, he used to sing.
He used to tell
stories and sing.
Yeah, that's right. He didn't sing, he told stories. But he used to put slice his bread real thin and put them on the windowsill and like they were toasted or something like that. You know? And then when we got Red Cross parcels, I'll never forget, you got a little, you get powdered milk, you get concentrated chocolate, And bread. You take the bread with a little water, and you make like a pie crust out of it. And then you take the concentrated chocolate and bake it up and put it inside. And then you take the powdered milk and you add it a little water to make it. And then so you had a chocolate cream pie.
Right.
You know, it's unbelievable. And then we used to, early on, we had a stove, but there was no chimney. And so you had to build a chimney with Klem cans, you know what I mean? And so we went upstairs. And then we'd fight the Civil War all over again. Then you had to build a damn chimney again. And it was unbelievable. And we used to get these little briquettes
right.
to put in the stove. And the worst thing was, a lot of guys were trying, not at our camp, but other guys. So they started taking slats away from us on our bedding.
Mm-hmm.
So each slat was, say, about three inches, maybe a little more than 3 inches, and I had four of them. And I had this straw mattress, and I had to try to position myself, because I was in the upper bunk, to make it, you know, go unbelievable. Ah, well, I think that's all. Okay.
Well, so we in the beginning of the tape, we told them that you had taken a train to Nuremberg, and then in the end, you were marching out in the countryside there.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Patton came to the camp and liberated you.
Yeah, that son of a bitch, yeah.
And then you took a boat home.
Yeah. And one of the sailors on the boat said, he says, if this thing ever gets in the storm, it'll rock 10 days after it gets in port.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to land in Newport News, of all places, instead of New York. That was that. And then, after I was a civilian, and Billy Morito, my best friend who I met, was in the 101st, he was in Holland Hospital in Staten Island. And one night he comes in, and we get have a few drinks together. And he says, come on, drive me back. Oh, sure, I drove him back. And it was about 3 o'clock in the morning. He says, no sense you going home, George. You might as well stay here. I'm a civilian. And we're in an army installation. And he goes down and he grabs the German that was taking care of the underwear and stuff like that. He says, give my friend here some clothing. I wake up in the morning, and the nurse is taking my temperature and my whatever, and she says, so-and-so, because somebody that was in that bed was on leave or something. It was AWOL, whatever it was. He says, you're much better. We got up, we cleaned up, we ate breakfast, shot a game of pool, and I went home, and nobody even knew I was there. That's sort of some of the stories I have. I had a lot of fun. A lot of fun. Now, Billy Morito has since died. He died of cirrhosis of the liver. My best friend who was in the 101st Airborne Division. I'm really sad about that.
Well, the last meeting you went to was the first time you ever met anybody from the 306th, right?
Yes, yeah, that's
that amazing,
right.
Up
in West Point,
years,
there was one other guy there.
That's the first time you ever met
And
anybody.
He was showing me his Air Force pin that he got from the 8th Air Force Society. He says, oh, I like yours much better.
That's good.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's it. You want to shut it down?
Yeah.